All right. So the recording has started, and we welcome to the Jefferson County Public Hospital District Number 2 Board of Commissioners meeting on Thursday, June 17th, 2021. This session is held pursuant to Governor Inslee's COVID-19 rules, specifically Proclamation 2028. There is no physical meeting location, and all attendees are participating virtually. It is being officially audio recorded. Board members present today are Commissioners Mari Dressler, Bruce McComas, Matt Reddy, and I, Jill Buehler-Reinstra. Commissioner Case Kauf is excused as he is working on a project for Children's Hospital. The purpose of this very important meeting is to gather ideas and thoughts from community members on the 2022-2025 strategic plan. We have outlined some of our ideas, but we can't do this effectively in a vacuum. So we want to hear from you, the owners of Jefferson Healthcare. Our CEO, Mike Glenn, will present an overview of our ideas, and then we will solicit your comments. Please keep in mind that the board is responsible for the strategic plan, while operations is the Dominion of Administration. Today's agenda is specifically to address the strategic plan. Comments on other matters may be made via email to commissioners@jeffersonhealthcare.org. And please remember, we are here to serve you. This is your hospital. So, Mike, would you please go ahead with the presentation?
Jill, just to let you know, Bruce is on the line now.
Welcome, Bruce. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Jill. Well, welcome to the board members and the other participants in the meeting. This is the second time that we have held a community forum for this cycle strategic plan. And I want to thank the board for taking the time to do this. I completely agree with Jill that particularly in the year 2021, after what we've just went through, developing a strategic plan for the next 3 to 5 years is as important as it is complicated. But what I do know is that our best chance of getting it right will require lots of different perspectives and viewpoints, and none more important than those of the patients and the community we serve. So thank you. Secondly, my intention is to handle this in this presentation in three parts. The first part is sort of review of our mission, vision, and values and overarching goals, as well as take you through a little bit of the history of the last 10 years at Jefferson Healthcare. We are a significantly different organization today than we were 10 years ago, and I think walking through that is important. The second part of the presentation will be a review of the strategic plan. It's kind of a truncated, very draft version of the strategic plan, where my best guess is that we probably are 60% done with it. We've identified the goals that we believe are important, and about half of the strategies to support doing the work of the goals that I will review. And we're really interested in comments about those goals, about those strategies, and if they align with your vision for where Jefferson Healthcare has to go. And frankly, if they are compatible with a pretty challenging healthcare financial environment that we expect to wade into these next few years. And then the last part of the presentation will be seeking comments and feedback on the plan. The last slide holds 3 or 4 open-ended questions about services that we can and should provide, programs that we can and should provide, as well as some process questions. Because I think that what is becoming more apparent to me as our community grows and the healthcare needs and services grow in our community, or the need for additional services grow in our community, not only is it important to really scrutinize how well we are providing care and providing services and acting as stewards of healthcare resources for what we do, we also need to be very mindful of the needs of our community and the choices that we either actively or passively make by virtue of programs that we currently provide, but we are unable to provide because you can only spend a dollar once. So I think going forward, we need to be comfortable talking about that. The opportunity cost of not meeting a need because we are focused elsewhere. So hope to conclude with lots of feedback and comment. I think we're ready for the presentation. So Alyssa, if you would be so kind to put it up. And next slide, please. So about a year and a half ago, it was before COVID, top leadership team got together and talked a little bit about what we wanted to accomplish in this 3 to 5 year strategic plan cycle. Because really, we're looking at this as the first 3 years of what's likely a 10-year plan or improvement trajectory. And we framed the question of, if we are wildly successful in developing this plan and implement everything in it, what would that look like? What would success look like 10 years from now or 3 years from now if we selected all the right goals, implemented all the right strategies, and delivered all of the success metrics we sought out to deliver? And we came up with we would be the highest performing, most clinically sophisticated critical access hospital in the country. We would be a fully accredited, award-winning organization. Accreditations are self-imposed. There are accreditation bodies that accredit your infection control programs, your cancer program, your laboratory, the entire hospital, and they really come in and not only check your processes, but they evaluate your outcomes. And our approach for the last 7 or 8 years is that we've never met a relevant accreditation opportunity that we didn't like, and we have been actively seeking them because we do believe that it gives us the discipline and the rigor and the roadmap to truly deliver the best care. And secondly, I think it lends confidence in our community that we are defining quality the same way as our competitors in Seattle, our competitors in Bremerton, and our partner hospitals in Port Angeles and Whidbey Island and some of the other rural hospitals that we work closely with. So our feeling is that accreditations are important, and they send a strong message to our community that when we say we provide care at the same quality as a hospital in Seattle, the accreditation and the surveys, we believe, help back that up. Next is to build and hold trust, admiration, and loyalty of our patients and our community. Really, we are in the trust business. Nothing could be more important between a patient and a provider or a hospital than that level of trust. And to be an incredible place to work and practice. This has never been more important, and frankly, never been more challenging than over the last 18 months, when we've tried to and been forced to navigate an incredibly stressful and challenging time in working through this this pandemic. And I'm very proud of the entire team for doing so. Next slide, please. the mission of Jefferson Healthcare, to hold the trust and improve the health of the community through compassionate care, innovation, and medical excellence. Next slide. Our vision statement: we will be the community's first choice for quality healthcare by providing exceptional patient care to every person we serve. We will do this by delivering safe, high-quality care, by championing an engaged workforce, by providing leadership to improve the health, wellness, and vitality of our community. And this was a new addition to our vision about 5 or 6 years ago, where prior to that, Jefferson Healthcare, like most rural hospitals, was pretty focused on its inpatient footprint, that we were inpatient acute care, maybe primary care, but for the most part, stayed within that level of taking care of the sick bandwidth of services. What became apparent to us that was only part of the equation, and that if we were truly going to make an impact on the wellness and well-being of our community, we had to figure out a way to stimulate greater health and greater well-being in our community. So we have slowly stepped into more robust health and wellness services. We have stepped into social determinants of health services like food insecurity and housing insecurity. And we continue to look for other opportunities where we can at least be at the table through the CHIP program or through some of our other partnerships to talk about these important health and well-being of our community services. And 10 years ago, that was an uncommon thing for rural hospitals to do that work. I would say 5 or 6 years ago, we were out in the forefront of rural hospitals doing that work. I think today you are behind the pack and maybe not meeting the needs of your community if you're not involved in that work. So I'm happy to say we will continue to be. And then lastly, demonstrating fiscal stewardship and thoughtful decision making to provide sustainable, high value care to all residents of our community. That it doesn't matter if you're doing all this good stuff if you go broke. And I think a recurring theme in my presentation is the last few years have been really, really difficult. And I expect the headwind for small rural hospitals to even be more severe. And while that's certainly not something we talk about when we are focused on developing the safest and highest quality care programs, it is something that we have to talk about to make sure that the sustainability of Jefferson Healthcare is strong, because this is becoming a thing, and rural hospitals have probably never been more threatened than they are right now. Next slide, please. Our values: respect, teamwork, stewardship, excellence, integrity, and compassion. What I normally say when I show this values slide is what's not to like about any of these terms. They are very likely the values of 75% of every hospital and maybe every business in the country. The trick is, can you claim them for your own? Does the way you interact with your colleagues and with your patients and with your community embody these values? And what I can tell you about Jefferson Healthcare is it's a work in progress, that there is no question that these values are our North Star and that they are important to us. And we are all working to embody them in a way that when an outsider steps into our organization, they would define our values because they would be so omnipresent. Next slide, please. Who we are. My apologies to the commissioners because they know who we are, but I think this might be helpful for some of the others. We're a critical access hospital, which means we're a 25-bed, which is very usual. What is unusual for a critical access hospital is to offer a full comprehensive array of services like we do. Mention that we are fully accredited, and we are meeting the healthcare needs of East Jefferson County, which we calculate to be about 31,000 residents in total. We're governed by a 5-member publicly elected board of commissioners, all of whom but Dr. Kolff are with us today, in case was certainly part of this presentation 2 days ago. We are the owner and operator of 6 rural health clinics, 5 primary care clinics with an express care, kind of urgent care clinic located in the hospital across from the emergency department, and 9 specialty service clinics employing around 84 primary and specialty care providers. This is a much larger employed provider footprint than you see from a typical critical access hospital. And, you know, I wish I could say that it was the result of amazing foresight and keen strategic planning. But in talking with Vic Dirksen, the CEO who preceded me, and what has continued to be the case, it's a matter of responding to community need. That in Vic's case, all of the clinics were private, and the doctors decided that the business environment in Jefferson County did not lend itself to healthy primary care clinics. The cost of doing business were higher than in other communities, and the revenue because of the payer mix was lower. So I'm told the providers would came and saw Vic like on a Friday afternoon and said, "We want to continue providing care to our community. We just don't think this business model will allow for it." And this, for those of you who know Vic, this should not surprise you. He said, "You are critical to our community. Let's do what it takes to keep you here. How about if we employ you, run the clinic, and then you can focus on care and we'll focus on the business side." That's how it started. And I can tell you that nearly every clinic since then has followed a similar path, in that there was a need. Either the community or providers spoke to us, and we stepped in to try to fill that need. And then, you know, wake up with 84 primary and specialty care providers providing incredibly important services to our community. We are the owner and operator of Jefferson Healthcare Home Health and Hospice Services, a fully accredited home health and hospice program for Jefferson County. And we're the largest employer in Jefferson County, employing 624 FTEs, which is 40-hour equivalent employees, and about 850 total employees, and generating over $65 million in annual payroll. Actually, we've annualized that for this year to be just a shade below $70 million. So that number is too big to really wrap your head around. Another way to look at that is Jefferson Healthcare kicks out $180,000 of payroll every day into our communities. So not only are we a big small hospital, we are a big part of the local economy, and know it and or like it or not, we are a big part of the economic development of Jefferson County. And lastly, we are the healthcare system of East Jefferson County. With the exception of a couple of excellent private primary care clinics in the community, mostly one provider clinics who fill an important role, we are it. And this became very apparent during the last 18 months and during our community's response to COVID. Because unlike other communities where there are multiple community clinics, larger private clinics, federally qualified healthcare clinics, to in effect share the load of standing up testing centers, of vaccinating 26,000 people, of standing up respiratory clinics to isolate COVID patients and provide that care in the safest way for patients and staff, and a COVID nurse consultation hotline. We were looked upon to do all of that because we were the only organization that could. So that was a heavy burden, and we stepped into doing all of these services that maybe we weren't, were new to us, and maybe we weren't equipped at doing, while at the same time had to run our primary care and our specialty clinics and our hospital and deal with COVID. So while I think in retrospect, we did an admirable job with that, we also have concluded that that's a heavy toll to place on any one organization. And in our discussions with public health and with some of the other players in future planning, we're already beginning to talk about the next. I can't say it. I'll just say future planning. What can our community do to better prepare and in a more sustainable way manage what comes at us? Next slide, please. In the last 8 years, Jefferson County's population has been fairly stagnant. It's grown by 5%. Jefferson Healthcare's adjusted patient days, which is sort of a relative value unit way of being able to fairly count everything from a lab test to a total joint replacement surgery, our relative value units have increased twofold. So the growth of Jefferson Healthcare, which is almost entirely on the outpatient side, is happening by not keeping up with community growth, but by introducing new services that community needs, opening access for patients that may not have sought care at all, but now do because it's locally available. I think we saw that with our dental clinic in a big way. And lastly, convinced people and made available services here in Port Townsend that folks were traveling to Bremerton, Silverdale, and Seattle to seek. It's a win for them because they don't have to travel across the bridge and in some cases across the ferry. It's a win for us because as we grow, we can do more services. Our number of FTEs have almost doubled from 362 to 624. Number of employed providers increased from 32 to 104. The reason that's bigger than the slide before is that this includes physicians other than primary care and specialty care physicians, emergency room doctors and other providers that weren't captured in the first assessment. And then the number of patients touched by Jefferson Healthcare increased from 300 to 625 per day. And this is a number that we saw about a year and a half ago. A consultant presented this. And basically, she attempted to count all of the patients that we had a clinical intervention with on any given day. And whether that be a emergency department visit, a visit to the primary care office, a visit to the oncology station, a lab test, all of the patients that we touched are now over 625 per day, which in our little community just is astounding to me. Next slide, please. Who we are is the community we serve, and we serve the oldest county in Washington State, with one third of our residents over the age of 65. I have seen Jefferson County listed as high as 7th, but more frequently as the ninth oldest county in the country by using the definition of percentage over the age of 65. While this is just a demographic fact, it has significant implications for a healthcare organization and particularly for a critical access hospital. Healthcare is consumed at a more rapid rate when folks turn 65 and older. So as we project utilization patterns, we age adjust it to account for the higher average age of our community. And secondly, with respect to critical access hospitals, we are reimbursed by our public payers, Medicare and Medicaid. Medicare being the insurance for 65 years old and older, Medicaid being insurance through the Affordable Care Act and through made available to lower income individuals. We are reimbursed by those insurances at or below our cost. So the thinking when Medicare and Medicaid established that payment mechanism is that typically Medicare and Medicaid represent 30 to 40% of your patient mix, maybe 50% in some communities. But the other 60-50% of your patient mix would be commercially insured patients. And commercially insured patients pay above your costs. So that this portion of your business was below your cost, but this portion of your business reimbursed you above your cost, and you're able to cost shift, cover that loss, and invest in other important services that require subsidy. At Jefferson Healthcare, between 78-75% of our business is Medicare and Medicaid or public payers. At about 22-25% of our payer mix is commercially insured. So three quarters of our business pays us at or below cost, and only a quarter of our business pays us above cost. And since I have been here, I've watched that number tick down, and there will be a level that if it gets much south of 20%, then I'm not sure that reallocation math will continue to work. So that is a concern for us, and we've had several discussions with the Economic Development Council, with the Chamber of Commerce, because I think the best way to improve that ratio isn't to shrink Medicare and Medicaid patients, but it's to increase commercially insured patients, and that's by increasing job opportunities that carry with them family wage jobs and family wage benefits. So you might be thinking, why is a hospital interested in economic development and Chamber of Commerce? Because truly, our ability to continue to grow and meet the needs of this community is based on more than a quarter of our patients paying us above our costs. So probably more than you needed to hear about the implications of the average age of our community, but it's something that's very real to me and to our Tyler and in our finance department, and as we project how we will continue to meet the needs of our community. And then lastly, and similar to what I spoke about earlier, we are the predominant provider of primary specialty surgical care, emergent care, hospice and healthcare in Eastern Jefferson County. And you know, this just is the model, right? Jefferson Healthcare is the organization that is looked upon to provide nearly all of the healthcare services in this community. So to us, it's the norm. It's very abnormal for communities our size and for organizations our size. Typically, as I mentioned earlier, there's four or five different other clinics that also contribute to the healthcare needs of the community. So this places a little bit more of a responsibility on us, and that we take that responsibility very, very serious. Next slide, please. So our growth story, this slide captures 10 years basically in four or five year chunks, starting at 2011 up to 2021 annualized. So we took our data up till May, divided it by five, and then times it by 12 to sort of calculate the annual number. And kind of go starting from the top to the bottom, the first line is our total net operating revenue. That's the revenue that actually comes in the door. Our total gross revenue is probably about $250-260 million, but the difference between what we bill and what Medicare and Medicaid pays us shrinks that to $137 million. Our total operating expenses, that's mostly labor. Probably about 70% of every dollar that we spend is on salaries and wages and benefits, which is why it is so important to us to get that right. The total operating expense is about $135-136 million, which according to our projections will leave about $1.5 million left over at the end of the year, which one is the smallest net income or bottom line than I think we have seen in quite some time, and secondly is just inadequate, frankly, to continue to provide a cushion. But more importantly, from that net income, we have to invest in new chillers, we have to invest in new HVAC equipment, we have to invest in new OR towers, in new laboratory analyzers, all of the stuff that is associated with progressive, high quality, state of the art care. And that we usually spend about $3-4 million a year on capital. That is a skinny bottom line. And I think it's the result of many of the things that I spoke about, in addition to still being in this real turbulent post, hopefully, COVID environment. I've spoken about our FTEs, total employees, 615-ish full-time equivalents, 854 total employees. So 854 families get checks from Jefferson Healthcare every other week. Our payroll, $70 million, which is a big number. The next line that I've circled in red, that is our average daily census, and that's the number of inpatients in the house on any average day. And the reason I've circled it is that if you go look up and down this list, you will see significant growth, exponential growth in many categories over the last 5 years, particularly on the outpatient side. So we have grown significantly in primary and specialty clinic visits. You'll notice that's gone from 61,000 in 2011 to 113,000. Our surgery cases have grown up by 15-20%. Our lab tests from 165,000 to 260,000. And diagnostic imaging, kind of a slow increase as well. The inpatient activity, for reasons, some reasons we understand, some reasons we don't, has not only stayed stagnant, but actually has ticked down a little bit the last couple of years. So this has implications for how we manage those units, because as every bedside caregiver will tell you, and I have seen it myself, that it's not like our census is 10.5 patients during a 24-hour period. It could be 5, 10, 15, 5, and then 10 again. That the amount of churn up on the units, particularly at a critical access hospital, is incredible. I mentioned Tuesday that I was doing rounding with Tina a week ago or so, and there were 14 patients in beds, with another patient being released from the operating room after a total joint replacement to be admitted. So 15 patients. And that was like at 4:30, 4:45 in the afternoon. The following morning at 8:30, our census was 21. And I looked at Tina and said, wow, what, you know, when were we up there? And while that was probably an unusually active 12-hour period, that's what happens. So I think the challenge in staffing and making a staffing plan that delivers high quality care, make sure that the right amount of caregivers are available at the bedside when they're needed, but not in the hospital when they are not needed, is a real challenge. And it only becomes more difficult when the financial implications of those decisions take on more importance. And frankly, when more and more needs in your community are being introduced, people asking for you to address those, it's a formula that we must figure out in order to maintain viability, but more importantly, in order to be able to allocate every Jefferson Healthcare dollar in a way that meets a patient need on the inpatient or the outpatient side. I spoke a little bit about adjusted patient days, how we counted those. You can see that those climbed by three times in 2011, and that's a great indicator for just how busy we are. Another interesting reduction in work is in the emergency department. And you'll see on the left side of the ED is probably about halfway through this form. But 8,000 to 10,000 in the early 2000s, we opened up our new emergency department in 2016, October of 16, and that resulted in about a 20% bump in 17, 18, 19. With COVID, ED visits dropped significantly, 40-50% for several months, and then leveled off at about 70-75% of what we've seen, which we expected. What we didn't expect is that lower utilization to continue in 2021. And for the first couple of months of 2021, ED utilization was 30% of target, and our target was 2019 volumes. And that was puzzling to us, particularly as we were starting to break free of COVID restrictions and COVID sensitivity, and a whole lot of people were getting vaccinations. Our worry is that there are unmet needs and individuals who should be seeking emergent care and aren't. That's the concern. The reality is it's a challenging area to staff and resource in a way that is prepared for anything that comes through the door, but also uses those scarce resources as efficiently as possible. All right, so the takeaway from this is incredible growth on the outpatient side, kind of a leveling off of growth on the inpatient side. Next slide, please. Looking across our region, I include this slide because when most people can tell you, me, that Jefferson Healthcare is a public hospital district, but then if I ask them, you know, what does that mean to you? They're unable really to articulate what that means. Some folks think that a public hospital district is like a public health department, where most of our revenue is provided through public streams of funding. And so therefore, we shouldn't have to worry about paying the bills at the end of the month and balancing a budget, that it's the fixed amount of money that should meet our community need. Well, that's not at all the case, that most public hospital districts rely on just the healthcare business model to make up 95% of the revenue that they need. And when I say the healthcare business model, that's the same model as that Whidbey, Olympic, Island, Mason, Forks, and Jefferson relies on is the same model as if a private hospital were to come into Port Townsend and beginning to operate. You see patients, you send a bill, and you get paid for that work. So we are certainly governed by a public hospital district construct, but we are very much in tune and dependent on our ability to make the private, if you will, hospital marketplace work. And the reason I show this slide is another area of huge variability is the degree of community supporting their public hospital with tax revenue. And other communities have made the choice to tax themselves at a higher rate to provide necessary support and relief of the challenge of balancing a budget. That several hospitals our size or smaller are in the $4, $5, almost $6 million range. And Olympic or Jefferson Healthcare is in about the $500,000 range. And really, that amount of money, if you pull in all of the costs associated with being a public hospital district and the staff associated with maintaining open public records, open public meetings, all of the accounting gyrations that we have to follow to be a public hospital district, you get to a cost very similar to that. So it's almost this net neutral amount of money our public hospital district revenue pays for the costs associated with being a public hospital district. In the past, we pointed to this as kind of a badge of honor that we will only tax our community when we have to. But what we have found is that if we had a higher tax base, then balancing our budget would be an easier exercise. And we'd have a $2 or $3 or $4 million head start. And therefore, it would be easier when we were assigning rate increases in order to make up for our growing expenses, those rate increases would be less. So I think that we are going to begin to look at that and truly ask ourselves, would the community be interested in the discussion about that if they saw this information and knowing the impact it could have on keeping rates lower and establishing more services for our community. Next slide, please. Years ago, when I first came to Jefferson Healthcare, I spent a lot of time going to the community and speaking about the state of the hospital. And I was accustomed to spending about half of that presentation on services and clinical performance, and then about half of the presentation on financial performance. One, because it's just such a big financial entity that we're the biggest business in the community. So how can you not talk about that? And secondly, the nuns that work for faith-based hospitals, no margin, no mission, that our ability to meet community needs was directly connected to the financial performance of the place. So I would talk about our bottom line and how we needed to grow it and my concern about that. And it was really met with this off-putting response that the community wasn't comfortable having that discussion. I didn't know what to make of that. I thought, well, I need to talk about this, but clearly a growing the bottom line for the sake of growing the bottom line isn't being well received or recognized. Then when I started seeing small rural hospitals go out of business and more relevant to our community, small rural hospitals getting gobbled up by larger hospitals, and the board made it very clear to me, that's not going to happen here, right, CEO? That I started talking about the importance of maintaining financial autonomy was that it allowed us to maintain governance and operational autonomy. And the translation to that is, on any given day, the leadership team and the board could sit down and decide to move on a new program or service for the community that might require a $500,000 subsidy. And we can make that decision if we thought it was in the best interest of our community. So five board members who are from this community, live in this community, are making decisions about the healthcare delivered in this community. Very important. I can assure you that most, if not every one of the organizations that were on the gobbled up side of the merger and acquisition equation, they probably would have preferred to have stayed independent. But their market condition, the challenges of the community, maybe their capital requirements required them to look for a system suitor. And 10 years ago, when we talked about this, it was mostly just theoretical that, if you don't perform well, you might have to go to the marketplace and sell out to a big system. But really, in the last 5 or 6 years, the amount of regional mergers and acquisition has been remarkable. And just to go down the list, Group Health is no more. They were purchased by Kaiser Permanente. So Kaiser does a great job, but their corporate office is in the Bay Area. Swedish, as we all know, is now part of the Providence Health and Services System. Harrison, St. Michael's, was purchased by Franciscans, and Franciscans joined CHI. And now a big system that is based out of Chicago. United, a small hospital in Cedro Willy, small critical access hospital in Cedro Willy, purchased by Peace. Valley partnered with Evergreen, Cascade in Mount Vernon, Auburn Regional purchased by MultiCare, Highline, Enum Claw purchased by CHI. Just recently, Virginia Mason, the last of the big independents, purchased by Franciscans Health. So Virginia Mason now is part of the same system as St. Michael. And Capital Medical Center in Olympia, recently purchased by MultiCare. So this is still a thing. This is a real threat if you or an opportunity. We view it as a threat. If you don't be mindful of your financial performance, this will happen because you just get to a point where you can no longer continue to invest in the things you need to invest in to provide high quality care. The opportunity is normally when something like this occurs, it comes with financial backing. Let me finish where I started. The board has made it very clear that this is not our path. And we are insanely focused on this not being our path. It's just the adult table discussion of if operational autonomy is important to you, you must maintain financial autonomy. We don't have a safety net. And things can turn south in a hurry when you are a hospital our size. So our focus on financial performance month after month after month has nothing to do with end of the year audit reports, and everything to do with maintaining the ability to stay independent and invest in important services and systems for the hospital. And it's something that I will always have simmering stress about because it has become such a trend. Next slide, please. So before I pivot to the strategic plan, I'll talk a little bit about the challenges that are here and now and right in our face. And the first is to recover from what we've just been through. It's been one hell of a year, I think, for everybody. It's been even more challenging of a year for people in healthcare. That it's been 18 months of uncertainty, ambiguity, anxiety, not really fully understanding the implications of what we were stepping into, but knowing that there was a considerable responsibility for us to be here. And it's not over. That what is becoming very apparent is that there are two stages of COVID. That there's the stage of if you're vaccinated, you're likely not going to be infected. And if you are infected, you're likely not going to get real sick. If you're not vaccinated, you're likely going to get infected and you're likely going to get sick. So while we are celebrating our macro vaccination performance and looking to getting out of this and watching the numbers go down in healthcare, you are still seeing a steady number of positives. We had 8 positives over the weekend, which is a huge number for Jefferson County. As of yesterday, we had an inpatient COVID positive patient, and there still are patients coming through the emergency department. So this is still very real to us. So before we can get over it, it has to stop. And it won't stop until more and more people of our community and our greater community get vaccinated. So for all the reasons that you're considering vaccination, I'll throw one more on it for you. And that's your healthcare system is tired as hell, and we want this to end too. So consider that. Secondly, we expect continued volatility and unprecedented low inpatient and ED volumes. What is still happening, and as of late, there's been an uptick in emergency care. So I think the community is beginning to use the ED the same way. But we're trying to figure out what the likely continued use of our inpatient, the acute care and the intensive care unit work will be. Our average daily census has been trending down, again over the last month or so. It has popped back up. And when I talk about unprecedented low volumes, in February we delivered 5 babies, which I think is a low number from what I recall seeing. And in April we delivered 1. Now, as I mentioned Tuesday, it is impossible to develop a sensible, satisfying a care team staff schedule for 16, 17, 18 care team members when you have 1 unit of service for the entire month. Most of the costs of providing that service aren't really variable. So this is a challenge that we have to figure out, particularly in the context of the test of, are we using every scarce Jefferson healthcare dollar to meet the healthcare needs in our community, knowing that there are so many needs not being met. So this changing world and our ability to change with it will continue to be important. Encouraging collaborative solutions to complex and worsening community shortages. We're all familiar with the housing shortage. We are feeling it on a daily basis as we attempt to recruit the 75, 80 open positions. What we are routinely hearing now is there's no place, I can't find a place to stay. And we're thinking, oh, you can't find just the right place. No, I can't find any place even for me to stay when I move out here. Well, that has chilling implications for an organization that is growing and needs to recruit folks for that growth. Childcare is another example that Dr. Parker and Dunya Pho and Tina Hirschelman are driving this community-wide effort to try to figure out childcare, sustainable childcare in our community. And while it's great that we've stepped into the brink and are doing that work, we've got lots of other things that we need. We must do. So this will only be solved if there is a collaborative community solution. The labor pool that we have incredible needs that will only be met by the labor pool growing. And then I've spoken a little bit about the need for economic development and driving more family wage jobs and family wage benefits. And then lastly, we have real serious facility issues and additional space needs. The building that I'm in right now with this awesome view was constructed in 1965 and has building code opportunities that need to be addressed. The same is true for the 1988 building, which is the building where the old emergency department and diagnostic imaging and the laboratory is in. And then the very real need of expanding space needs in dermatology, in medical oncology, and on our family birth unit, that's going to require us to do something, and that we were looking at a new building that could accommodate that need. Okay, I will now pivot to the strategic plan and walk you through what we have come up with thus far. So objective, we want to be the highest performing rural healthcare system and critical access hospital in the country. The first goal, next slide, please, are five goals to do this, to attain excellent health outcomes for all, to deliver a care experience that exceeds patient expectations, to be an incredible place to work and practice, to remain an independent, financially strong healthcare organization, and to support health and promote wellness in the communities we serve. Next slide. Goal one, attain excellent health outcomes for all. We want to deliver patient-centered care guided by the best evidence. There's a tremendous amount of scientifically validated best practice approach to delivering care. And we are blessed by having an incredible group of local providers that subscribe to where is this done the best in the world and what does the data say. So we want to be able to leverage that and make that work easy for them and easy for our clinics. We want to enhance the use of technology for improving patient outcomes. I think that rural hospitals are typically slower to embrace technology. I think that we are going to speed that up and look for ways to improve the patient care experience, the efficiency of that experience, and just the quality of the outcome by technology solutions. And we're going to continue to assess and address health equity within Jefferson Healthcare and our community. Because, you know, as we have seen over the last year, this is real, and there is no excuse to not openly talk about this and work to improve it. Secondly, improving transitions of care. You know, I think that if you could just define healthcare by the 20 minutes the doctor spends in the exam room with the patient, I think most patients would be extraordinarily satisfied with that experience. That's where the magic happens. That's when doctors do what they like to do and the most valuable time for patients. But unfortunately, that's just one data point of probably a dozen data points of the entire patient continuum. So calling a clinic to get an appointment, scheduling a diagnostic imaging test, going through that registration process, waiting for the results, transferring the results of that test maybe to another provider. That is the transitions of care that the entire industry needs to get better at, and we want to lead that way. You know, from a healthcare administrator, I have one perspective, but from a family member helping brothers and sisters and mothers, parents and my daughter navigate the healthcare system, it sometimes you just kind of scratch your head and say, holy smokes, There is so much opportunity for improvement. Let's be the organization that breaks through with that. And that's what we mean by frictionless patient navigation. Frictionless is a term that Jeff Bezos at Amazon came up with. It's basically what they were Amazon was looking for in their purchasing experience. We want to do that with how a patient gets through our healthcare system. Next slide, please. Harm no patient. That's where it all starts. We are looking at the highly reliable organization framework to make sure that the redundancies and the best practices are hardwired in every time we touch a patient. We are committed to resuming a performance improvement methodology like Lean hospital-wide to make sure that we all have a robust set of tools as we identify and move on improvement opportunities. And then it's all about data. We have grown incredibly over the last 3 or 4 years in our ability to compile data and use it to help improve decisions. And we look to continue that. Next slide, please. Goal two is to deliver a care experience that exceeds patient expectations. We are fascinated with this concept of radically convenient access to care. And the reason we are so fascinated by it is that most healthcare patients around the country would use a million other terms to define access to care before they would use radically convenient. And we want to define that and again, break through and be that organization, be the organization that truly exceeds expectations from the first call to when and after the bill comes in and is settled. And to do that, we think we're going to have to leverage technology, truly allow patients incredible access through MyChart, or through other systems that sit on Epic and allow for active two-way participation in that care process. And then we want to create a culture that promotes, in other words, a culture that really encourages radically convenient access to care and an infrastructure that supports systems, resources, technology that makes delivering on that easier. Next slide, please. To develop and cultivate a service excellence culture with all employees of Jefferson Healthcare. Years ago, we had Jefferson University. Every employee went through a two-day program, drilling in how we define service excellence, sharing a common language, and instilling a common culture about this importance. We stopped it. We're going to start it again. And develop Jefferson Healthcare Service Excellence Scorecard to monitor patient satisfaction performance and benchmark with other organizations. We spend most of our time benchmarking internally. Are we getting better? But I think to achieve the level we want to achieve, we need to begin benchmarking in a robust way other organizations. Next slide, please. Consistently deliver an outstanding experience with every encounter. Healthcare is this big, huge system, but it's a very personal event. And we need to hardwire that as difficult as that may be and sound into the systems and the care processes that we develop. Deliver consistent, intuitive, and inviting service standards across all of Jefferson Healthcare. Hospitals are so often, by the way they are constructed and put together and managed, in such a counterintuitive way. For a while, one floor for Jefferson Healthcare Hospital was one floor, and then you would walk into the old 29 building and be on another floor. So the second floor of the 29 building would be the first floor of Jefferson Healthcare, and you know, only a hospital administrator could come up with that, right? We are more focused on what makes sense to our patients, not necessarily just to us. And then define patient care experience continuum, starting with the initial patient outreach all the way to satisfactory settlement of the bill. Next slide, please. Goal three, to be an incredible place to work and practice. We are in the trust and we are in the people business. And on a good day, the work that we do is challenging. And on a challenging day, we have to have this fabric that allows for rejuvenation, recharge, and inspirational work. Attract and select high performers that exemplify the Jefferson Healthcare way. Focus on interviewing and onboarding to always hire and develop the best candidate. And invest in diversity training. We insist on the hospital looking like the community it serves. Next slide, please. To develop and retain high performers, we have underinvested in training and development these last couple of years in a huge way in some areas of the hospital. And we are going to change that. We have to change that. Running a $100 million, 500 employee operation, which is what we were a handful of years ago, is completely different than running a $140, $150 million operation and 850 employees. The complexity at some point of what we were and what we are now just snuck up on us and changed. And I think part of our challenge is creating a chassis to support this larger, more complex organization, because relying on the same systems that worked when we were half of this size, I think would just continue to frustrate and under-deliver. Ensure the organization has high-performing leaders. We've spent a lot of time engaging with our middle managers, if you will, directors, supervisors, and managers, and they have the hardest job in the hospital. They are in many cases at the bedside, right outside of the exam room, working with our caregivers and the care teams to deliver care at the hospital and coordinate all of that and deal with that environment to the satisfaction of our employees. And yet they end their day meeting with someone like me who talks with them about their budgets and who talks with them about their productivity and all of the stuff that keeps us sustainable. And I just only have half of that job, and it's challenging. our managers are really challenged by that. And what we are committed to is increasing our investment in giving them the proper tools. Next slide, please. And then support our providers in a thriving, rewarding practice. That our deal with our providers, when each one of them agreed to come work with us, is we'll take care of the business side, and then we will work collaboratively with you to create a clinical practice that is takes good care of your patients and that is rewarding to you. And boy, there's EMRs and there's pre-authorizations and there's paperwork and forms and insurance interaction that at times makes that hard, but it's our responsibility to plow through that and help our doctors find the joy in medicine, which occurs when they are in front of their patients. Next slide, please. To remain an independent, financially strong healthcare organization, I've talked a lot about this. This was difficult before COVID. We are still trying to understand the long-term implications of COVID. We got enough CARES money or federal money to basically keep Jefferson Healthcare intact when our activity was at 50%, and that was a godsend. But going forward, we remain concerned about what that financial horizon looks like. Identify and confront market forces that may challenge Jefferson Healthcare's independence. That there are hospitals that are seeking to grow their market, and the way they are trying to do that is come into ours. And you know, if they want to come in and provide behavioral health care and substance abuse care and low income dental care, awesome. You know, I will show you the door. But that's not the areas that that these competitors are interested in. And this has an implication for us that we as a community need to figure out. And it's here. Every time you pick up the PT leader the last 6 weeks, in full page increments, you understand what I'm saying. Next slide, please. Improve value by improving the efficiency of care delivery. It used to be that the government would just encourage that we get more productive. They're going to require it now. They're going to require that hospitals meet certain efficiency standards, certain cost per care standards, all the while delivering high quality care. That's just a game that we have to play, or we will be unable to meet the needs of our community. And then develop new facilities to grow existing services and expand new services to meet community need and maintain financial viability. We need new facilities to just accommodate our existing growth. And what we heard on Tuesday is a strong appetite for our community to provide more care, more services. And we need the space, and we need the financial ability to do that. And I think the strategic plan is going to be focused on that. Next slide. And then this is a fancy way of saying, make sure at the end of the month, more dollars come in than dollars go out. Insurance companies are pretty skilled at making sure that you earn both clinically and administratively and bureaucratically every dollar that they send you. And that's another game that we have to play and play well. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. I think I just spoke to that. Goal 5, to support health and promote wellness in the communities we serve. Strengthen our position as an anchor of the community. We've suddenly kind of become a big deal in Jefferson County by virtue of our size. And with that comes responsibilities. We spend a lot of money buying services and buying goods. Should we look to purchase more of those goods from community vendors so that more boats are lifted? And we will continue to be active in our community health improvement plan to make sure that those health and wellness and community programs are on our radar. Next slide, please. And demystify healthcare economics. Help our patients understand how crazy and how wacky and seemingly counterintuitive this can be. And create a financial counseling advocacy experience that informs and supports all patients. Next slide. Okay, so I think for the next 15 or 30 minutes, we are interested in hearing from the participants to help with our strategic plan, the additional clinical services we should consider, lots of good input on Tuesday about programs and services that folks are leaving the community for, and that would be of value to provide here, both clinical and health and wellness wise. Should we look for local strategic partnerships to improve our care? And then lastly, I've spent a great deal of time talking about the challenge of doing this work. If we are forced to make really difficult decisions, scarcity-like decisions, what would be the best way to seek community input? Because those will be very important decisions that I think the board would want to get right. And I think the goal, the chat box is a great way to ask your question or make your comment. And I think the raise your hand icon is also turned on.
Thank you, Mike. Wonderful presentation. Now it's up to our patients. Please let us know now. What sorts of services and procedures you'd like to see right here at home for you. Do we have anything on the chat box yet?
Yes, we do have a couple questions on the chat box. Pat states, nice presentation, Mike, and then states, one birth in April is truly an outlier. There were two births total in March and May. Can you address any data you have regarding the percent of newborns born in JH that then become new clinic patients for Jefferson Healthcare?
I don't have data for that.
So can we go ahead to the next question then?
Looks like Kathleen has her hand up.
Okay. Kathleen?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, thank you. This is an excellent presentation. I wish everybody could see it and to understand the challenges that are facing us. I'm so glad we're independent. I think we're one of the best things ever. I had a couple questions. One is, we are an old county, and I'm wondering why we don't have a gerontology department, because so many of us might really like somebody who understands what's happening to us as we get older. Also, I'm a volunteer at the hospital, and I think we could really maybe benefit from a lot more volunteers that could help provide services that would support the staff and the community.
Great.
Thank you, Kathleen, for those comments. It may not surprise you to hear gerontology was a program mentioned Tuesday that we need to look into, and we will. We will put that on the list of services and how well that could augment with our current primary care group. When you have a population the size that we have of patients eligible for or who could benefit from gerontology care, every one of our doctors has a significant practice presence of 65 and older patients. The model of a gerontologist, two or three gerontologists, which if you attempted to hire, you probably couldn't find anyway. In a clinic, seeing gerontology patients probably wouldn't work here. But I think we have talked about gerontologists having a practice, but also acting in a consultative role to help our primary care providers, who nearly all of them, 50% of their practice constitutes that age bracket, help them improve their care. So that's a long answer to your question, but you're spot on, and it's something that we will consider and talk long and hard about.
Thank you, Kathleen.
We have a question in the chat box from Stacy. It says, should we consider a pain clinic with multimodal care, such as chiropractic, acupuncture, PT, meditation, yoga, and postural therapy?
Mike?
Another great question, Stacy. Dr. Mattern has been advocating for a multimodal interventional, if necessary, pain clinic for years. And it is a it's another service that our community needs. Nearly all of our doctors have a cohort of patients that have chronic lingering pain, and that I think the focus on reducing opioid prescriptions, it was necessary and served a useful purpose, but at the same time, it may have complicated efforts to take care of some forms of chronic pain. So Joe has spent a lot of time in the last 18 months trying to design a model that could work in our community, interface with our medical community. And in fact, we've even talked with a couple of doctors about possibly coming in and helping us with that. It just hasn't gotten off the ground yet, but excellent point, and probably as necessary or would be as beneficial as a gerontology consultative practice. So thank you.
Thank you, Stacy. Great question. Comment. Any more? Do we have anybody else out there who has thoughts about what you'd like to see in the future?
I do not see any hands up and nothing in the chat box.
Okay, well, at this point, we still have about 6 minutes. Is there anything any of the commissioners would like to comment on?
We did just get a question.
Oh, we did. Okay.
Pat asks, the SANE program for sexual assaults is staffed by some of the Jefferson Healthcare nurses. Could a longer term goal be a program? Like SANE that would serve the mental health population?
That's an interesting question. Mike, do you have any comment on that?
I don't. Not sure I completely understand. The same program, it is largely staffed by Jefferson Healthcare nurses. It's another one of those programs that serves a incredibly important purpose and fills a very necessary need. And I say this like it's a bad thing, and it's not, but the number of SANE interventions that we've experienced since we've set up the program is very low. So the commitment to that is robust, but I think it typifies the challenge of small rural hospitals with this expansive footprint, trying to deliver high quality care with very, very low volumes. But I do know that our commitment to that program is rock solid. It just takes, in fact, we celebrated about 4 or 5 months ago, we celebrated the fact that we got not our first successful SANE intervention, which we helped a woman and a family get through a really difficult time. We got our first conviction. So because of the program complemented the legal system in a way that not only took wonderful care of the patient in need, but the work of the SANE nurse allowed for a conviction and someone being held responsible for that horrible act. I can speak to that part of it, and a SANE that would serve the mental health population. It's a fascinating concept, and maybe send me more information. I would be interested in learning more about what you mean, because basically SANE is for domestic violence, kind of this quick hitting, immediately available wrapping services around someone who's going through physical and emotional trauma. And I think you can look at that through a behavioral health lens and say, boy, those patients could benefit from that level of wraparound services too. So it's a fascinating concept. Thank you, Pat.
Okay. It looks like Catherine Kathleen Waldron was asking again about more volunteers. I'm not sure we addressed that.
Yeah, I think that what I think it's a two-part answer. One is the hospital has been pretty much shut down from visitors for a year and a half now. So our auxiliary, our volunteers, the gift shop, all of that important level of resource we have not been able to benefit from because of COVID. And I think now that hopefully we are seeing the end in sight, that as we begin to welcome visitors back to the hospital, volunteers would be there too. But secondly, we would love there to be more volunteers. I mean, I think that a challenge with the gift shop, for instance, is getting enough volunteers to adequately staff the gift shop. So I think I speak for Rose and the whole team that that when this program gets stood back up, that the more volunteers, the better off for their program and complementing our services. So yes, I think that's a great idea.
Thank you, Thank you, Kathleen. Is there anybody else?
Pat did ask a question earlier that I missed that said, what percentage of ED patients without primary providers come into the Jefferson Healthcare Clinic system?
You know, we used to track that with the walk-in clinic. Because a goal of the walk-in clinic would be to convert patients walking in to a primary care provider. And at that time, the number was about 30%. But what we found is they were patients that, you know, I'm good. I prefer to seek my care this way, intermittently and not through the conventional way of signing up with a primary care provider. And we would convince them that the care would be more comprehensive and you'd have an entire care team or attempt to convince them, but some just would prefer not to go through that. I would imagine that it's probably about 30% that come through the emergency department. And what I will take from that comment is, I don't think that we actively engage patients that we see that don't have a primary care provider and try to connect them with one. Maybe that's the opportunity.
Thank you.
Jeanette just asked, what are the factors that determines which services Jefferson Healthcare will provide?
Well, that's a great question. It's this balancing act of, That's a great question, probably to wrap up this entire presentation. Right now, there is a crazy amount of need in our community in so many different areas, and yet a real challenging financial environment. It starts with understanding where the highest needs are, and usually it's by volume, but not necessarily. It could just be, boy, this is a service that we wouldn't see as many patients as pulmonology and neurology, but it's a service that really needs, has intense consequences by not being provided locally. I think medical oncology, chemotherapy was a great example of that. So a clinically driven process identifies what those needs are. And then the financial assessment, and you know, this is the part of the discussion, and frankly, the part of my job that really sucks, because you wish that wasn't important. You wish you didn't have to maintain a financial balance that relies on a business model to deliver an important service, but But unfortunately, we don't, you know, we don't live in a healthcare environment that we wish we had. We live in a healthcare environment that we do. So to answer your question, Jeanette, it's this: can we afford to do this? And if not, where can we reallocate underutilized resources to help free up dollars for this? And really, that's the flip side of exercises to become more efficient, exercises to more precisely place resources where patient activity is. Because again, you can only spend a healthcare dollar once. And I constantly see pressing healthcare needs that it pains us not to be able to fill.
Thank you, Mike. Well, we are out of time, a little bit over, and anyone else who wants to contribute, we please do so by sending an email to commissioners@jeffersonhealthcare.org. It's also on our website, and I promise we will read and consider every single one. So please give us your input, your thoughts, and your comments, and thank you for your participation. It's very important and very welcome. Thank you. So we will conclude the meeting at this point. Is there a motion to conclude?
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
You have been seconded? Discussion?
I'd just like to add a note, if I may, from Melanie. Now, Knudsen is... that not only do babies born here become patients, but they also become workers. And many of the babies born here now work for Jefferson Healthcare.
Okay. All right. So we moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Bruce?
That was spoken like a proud OB nurse.
That's
always an OB nurse.
Yes, ma'am. Good on you.
Thank you. I saw one of my babies today. She took care of me.
This meeting is now concluded.
Thank you,
everyone.